Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So hey everybody, welcome to episode 228 of the Morning Just Go podcast. My name is Tim Mitchell and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And we have Mark Rubin down in San Jose, California.
Luke.
All righty then.
So Tim, you were actually able to get through that one without screwing up.
Yeah.
A new year.
It's a new year.
Yeah. A new way to do things.
It's a new millennium. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, just we have one fact check thing. And we actually did this last year. We talked about Boxing Day and then we were kind of confused about what it really means and things. And so I did go back and look it up just for the sake of fact checking it again. And according to Wikipedia, it's a secular holiday celebrated the day after Christmas Day. For those of you who don't know, it's not celebrated in the United States, as Mark and I were discussing last week, but it was originally a day for when people would package up gifts for postmen and errand boys and servants that would receive boxed up gifts. In other words, the Christmas box. But so it was a way of giving presents to kind of like the day when the milkman or whatever would knock on the door and ask for the package. Or the box or whatever kind of thing. So that's one of the known ideas behind Boxing Day. Mm. All right, so let's start off with some follow up. I think it's Jaime must have put this one up here, but the man in Oregon, I think it is.
That wasn't me. I thought it was you. Was it Greg? No. Since it's unnamed, it
wasn't me.
Must have been Greg. Maybe Greg must have stealthy put this in here. Okay, well I'll follow up on it. This I don't know how far this goes back, but this is a 2-year-old story. So I don't know when we started following up on it, and followers of the show will know that we. We regularly take offense when people use the word engineer for our profession, software developers, right? I mean, I would love to call myself a software engineer, but here in Ontario and most of Canada, protected term, and it turns out that it's also a protected term in Oregon. And there was a man who had actually studied engineering in Sweden, I think. Anyway, he'd written a post about traffic lights and how the yellow light was too quick. And he got charged with calling himself an engineer in public, even though he wasn't a practicing engineer, right? So by the Board of Examiners of Engineering and Land Surveying in Oregon. Judge has upheld his ability under the First Amendment to call himself an engineer because, in fact, he had studied it himself, even though he wasn't, working as an engineer. He was just calling himself an engineer. And
It's not working as that he wasn't a quote professional engineer, which is a thing that you basically have to just pay money and take a little test and you become
a professional engineer.
It's common for things like civil engineering. It's extremely, extremely uncommon for anything in tech. In fact, I don't know anyone who's ever done it in tech, although I'm sure some have. But
you mean call himself an engineer in tech
taken the test to become a professional engineer? But everyone is called an engineer. engineer, at least down here in tech. Not everyone, but the terms are pretty interchangeable, developer and engineer.
Yeah, and I'm seeing it more and more up here in Canada. Like, I'll see posts on LinkedIn, they'll ask for software engineers, or postings, you know, on hired sites and stuff like that. I'll see it. And it kind of, like, you know, it piques my interest because, you know, my father was a professional engineer, right? So that's why I knew about the use of the word. But
and what branch of engineering did he do?
He was a mechanical engineer.
Mechanical engineering, okay.
Yeah, and my uncle was an electrical engineer. And I think my nephew, Timothy, by the same name, is also some kind of engineer. I forget now. His older brother, Matthew, is a nuclear engineer. So I guess what would that be? I forget what that one is. But yeah, he works up in a nuclear plant up in Petawawa, I think. Anyway.
I have a friend who works up there now.
Oh, yeah? Cool. Mm-hmm. So Matthew Holmes is his name. Anyway. So I like I said, you know, I would love to be able to put engineer on my software engineer on my LinkedIn profile. And I probably could, but the reality is that, like, my title is not software engineer at work, you know. But you do see it. And I do see it on people's resumes and stuff like that from time to time. And I do know many people who have, you know, the iron ring that they wear up here on their pinky to signify that they're an engineer. And I'm sure some of them have probably taken the test, as you mentioned. But anyway, so this guy's been, his federal judge has, I guess, ruled against the state law governing who can call himself an engineer. We'll post a link in the show notes.
Yeah, I think in this case, it kind of suffered on two sides. I think the reason it even got a lot of attention is because that board was using that that law sort of punitively, right? And they were using it, in my opinion, again, not a lawyer, they were using it to suppress things that they didn't like. For example, this guy rightfully called out, hey, I did these measurements and this doesn't make sense. It doesn't account for, like, left turn slowing down time. And the other part was that it was, as far as the United States handles freedom of speech and our particular view on it, it was way too restrictive on speech, given what they were actually trying to do, right? They were trying to make sure you can't misrepresent yourself as being an engineer, but really that's more meaningful in commercial context, right? Like, you go and bid on, you know, some government project and say, hey, I'm Bob, I am an engineer. That's what they were trying to address, not, hey, I am Bob, I'm an engineer, and here's these things I think in non-commercial context, right? In non-governmental context, like just casually talking right now. And I think it's kind of similar to, you know, if you're seeing, like, those MTV shows or let's say radio shows say, oh, I'm Bob and I'm the love doctor. I don't really see the medical boards coming out and try to pull that person behind the curtain and shut them down, right? Because I think people rightfully understand that that's the case. And I think for engineers, it's a little bit weird to try to regulate something that, like, no random individual citizen will use and be mistaken for, right? Like, you know, okay, great. I claim I'm Bob. I'm an engineer. I'm very certain that whatever government contract or commercial contract comes up says, hey, great, show us your documentation that proves that you're an engineer, right? Like in the civil engineering sort of circumstance. It's not as if random people are going to go up off the street and be confused. And I think that's why we get a little bit more attention towards the lawyer aspect and the medical doctor aspect, because individuals do go out and seek those. And I think with maybe the exception of the one carve out of, like, you know, love doctor or something, you know, truly ridiculous, we generally don't end up clamping down on that.
Yeah. And this gentleman, Mats Jarlström, also holds a bachelor's degree in the science of engineering from Sweden, is what I was saying earlier. So technically studied engineering. So, but it was interesting though, is that it's Beaverton resident, Mats Jarlström, and up here in Toronto area, we have a comedy or a fictitious city called Beaverton, and they have a fake news TV program where they do these ridiculous stories, and the name of the show is Beaverton. So when I saw the headline saying Beaverton resident Matt Strolsom, blah, 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 I thought it was a joke at first. So thanks, Greg. That was Greg.
That's interesting. Given the beaver and its importance in a political history for Canada, I'm surprised that there isn't a Beaverton somewhere in Canada.
No, I mean, and that's the thing. There is. It's a fictitious city with this fictitious news story. It's pretty funny, actually. They're kind of ridiculous. But
well, you know, the official mascot of MIT is the beaver, Tim the Beaver.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So the reason is that the beaver is nature's engineer.
Oh.
Mm, so maybe in Beaverton, they take it pretty seriously.
Well, who knows? Who knows? Uh-huh. Or not, depending on which part of Beaverton, which Beaverton you're talking about.
I'm talking about the real one in Oregon.
I know. All right. So there's a couple of, did you post this one here about Apple updates Q1 guidance? Was that?
No, I'm guessing you, without a name. CNBC? I'm guessing it wasn't any one of us. It was probably Greg.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So this just came out today. And if you, I don't know if you guys had a chance to read this, but it was talking about Apple's claim here. And then I've also posted something from Gruber, John Gruber, who posted on Daring Fireball, his sort of take on the call. So, Mark, do you have any background on this call today?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we've been speculating about things for a long time. There's been a lot of rumors for, seems like, months now that this was coming, and we never took it too seriously because, you know, you shouldn't take rumors too seriously, but now we got to take it pretty seriously. This is for real. This is pretty big. I mean, Apple hasn't done this in I don't know, like
since 2002.
Years. Yeah, it's been a long time, and it's showing that there's something up. There's some real issues. It's not clear whether it's, you know, it's just peak iPhone and this was coming naturally. I tend to think it's not that, because I think they could have forecasted that a little bit better, you know, 3 months ago in the last earnings announcement. So it does look like I think the article does explicitly say that it's China and likely to do with the trade war we're in, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, they do say it's China. It's interesting. Some of the stats that were in here were that, I think maybe in the Gruber article said that, you know, in 2007, they sold a bunch of phones, and in 2008, they sold, you know, more than that. And then 2009, they sold even more. Like, it was like, you know, in 2009, they sold more than 2007 and 2008 combined, and 2010. So they've been growing and growing and growing, always, you know, doubling or quadrupling the number of phones they sold. And they've kind of maybe hit a peak. And so they're kind of relying on big markets like China, which is like 30 times the size of the United States in terms of potential sales. And when that takes a hit, you know, it's going to cost Apple some money. And so that's what apparently Tim Cook was talking about this morning or today, about the fact that they're going to have to drop their, I think, what, let me just see if I find the number here. So they had initially said, they had estimated 89 to 93 billion in sales, and they dropped it down to 84 billion. So I don't know if that, do you think that'll affect the stock price tomorrow, kind of thing, Mark, or
yeah.
I mean, right. If you think it goes down when good things happen, it's going to go way, way down when bad things happen. People panic, I think.
Well, it said it was down 7% when trading was. So they had halted trading while they made the announcement, and then it went down 7% 20 minutes later.
You can never take after hours trading too seriously.
After hours, right? Yeah.
That was all after hours. The reason is that it's not, after hours trading is a secondary market. It's not the real market. So volumes are very low. It's people basically doing their own, you know, some brokers will allow you to trade after when the market's not actually open based on their own pool of, you know, supply that they have. But since the number, since the volume tends to be very low, things tend to get magnified. So you can't take it too seriously. But having said that, you know, this is not a good thing. It's possible that the market has already accounted for a lot of this in the last big drop, because it did drop by a lot. And, you know, when Apple said in their last earnings announcement, I guess, you know, and I said earlier that they didn't forecast this, but maybe they were hinting at it when they said they weren't going to break out the iPhone numbers separately anymore. So they...
Right. Yeah.
They probably had some inkling that something wasn't quite right. Maybe they didn't know for sure, or maybe they had some hope that it was going to recover, or maybe they had hope that the trade war issues were going to go away by now. And that's actually a typical thing to do. I mean, companies won't warn until they absolutely have to, because it's always possible that things will recover and before the end of the quarter, and then things aren't as bad as they seem. But once they warn, I mean, it's a pretty pretty dire thing. When a company warns, that means something's really, really not good.
Yeah, and it doesn't bode well for everybody because it's not, because I mean, Apple being the biggest company in the world, or right now, I guess, their biggest valuation or whatever, I think maybe they're going to pass by something else. But the fact that they're suffering means that everybody else is going to suffer in turn, right? Like, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not necessarily everyone, but you know, certainly anyone else who deals with China and other tech companies that are part of the Apple ecosystem will certainly suffer, suppliers and whatnot, and probably similar, you know, peer companies who are not necessarily in the ecosystem will also suffer just as a collateral damage kind of thing. If people are worried about buying phones, or worried about, you know, Apple is a bellwether, right? You know, if as Apple goes, the market goes in some sense. So even if, let's just say, Samsung doesn't have any issues of their own, if people get spooked by this, then they might sell Samsung or even Google stock or whatever. So probably they will. So yeah. No, it's not good. It's not good. As I was saying though, it's possible that some of this is already baked in based on the warning that Apple gave and based on just all the rumors. So it's possible that tomorrow we'll see a spike down, but then it'll recover because people think it's oversold. It's possible.
Right. Yeah.
But I'd be wary about buying on the dip at this point. I'm no expert. You know, talk to your financial advisor, et cetera, et cetera.
Just for entertainment purposes only.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. I'd be wary about buying on the dip at this point. On the other hand, this could trigger capitulation, which capitulation is when, you know, there's always some holdouts who people who are optimistic and are just holding on, thinking that, you know, that things are not going to get any worse. And capitulation is basically when they give up and they just sell.
Right.
And that's when the stock hits its bottom. And that's always, if you can time that, that's the best time to buy because it's only going up from there. But you know, who knows?
Yeah, we don't know how deep the rabbit hole goes at this point in time with all what's going on in the U.S. politically.
Yeah. I mean, I'm starting to get worried about macro effects. You know, are we going to have a recession in the next year? My guess is we will, but who knows? And if we do have a recession, then the market will not be happy about that.
No,
in general, it's hard to say what will happen. Even if we don't have a recession, but if interest rates go up more, which they probably will, if the economy will turn down or it won't, right? One or the other. If the economy does turn down, interest rates probably won't go up anymore. Might even go down, although there's not too far for them to go down. But if the economy just keeps going strongly, then interest rates will keep going up, and that's an incentive for people to take money out of the stock market. There, you can basically get, that means you can get risk-free interest, right? And if you get more, the more interest you can get in a risk-free account, the more likely people who are more conservative are going to pull it out of stocks, which are inherently risky, and put their money more into more fixed income stuff to get away from the risk. So as people pull money out of the market, obviously the market will go down. So I think there's a pretty good chance that the market overall has further to go down. But again, I'm not a financial advisor. Don't take my advice. Do your own research.
Sure, yeah. Speaking of big changes coming, Jaime, why don't you tell us about what Apple's doing in India?
Yeah, I think we talked before about older iPhone devices being made in, or manufactured, or probably final assembled when we say that, in India. And that being largely a way to avoid the rather high tariffs on imported smartphones. And it looks like in early 2019, Apple's going to start building more of the high-end iPhone models. And presumably that means newer iPhone models there. This particular one we have here, linked in the show notes for those of you driving at home, doesn't really talk about it. And maybe I looked at a different one. There was some speculation that would be smartphones just for the Indian market. But I mean, I'm not an economic advisor or an economist, but it kind of seems that if this trade war between the United States and China stays protracted or gets worse, it would be sensible to have an alternative source for importing to the United States, right? Where you don't have a trade war going on between India and the USA. So that's sort of what I'm looking forward to in 2019, reading the tea leaves to see if Apple starts making motions towards doing exactly that.
Yeah, in the article that you have posted here, it says that Apple's been assembling iPhones in India since 2017, starting with the iPhone SE and followed by the iPhone 6S earlier this year. So the report is maybe the iPhone iPhone 10 and other phones will be made there. So interesting to see. But I mean, the other thing too is, I mean, like in markets like India, where it's really expensive, prohibitively expensive to buy an iPhone for most people, maybe it's a way of bringing the price down for them as well, which it seems to be a strategy that Apple rightly or wrongly has used in recent months, right? Trying to reduce the price of things. So there was an article that Gruber points out in the, I think we talked about it back in November, that Apple may have misjudged the price of the iPhone 10R because people, you know, it's too expensive for most people's tastes, right? So it's all good. And yeah, like you said, the trade war is a huge, huge incentive for Apple to move out of China.
Yeah, and I think the economic cycle we have coming, again, I'm also, again, not an economist, but I have felt that a recession is a year or two away. It just feels like 2008. It feels like 2000. It feels like things are ready for a correction. I've certainly been doing things in accordance with that. But I do think that having, you know, some regularity towards your business is probably the key thing. That not only for Apple, but probably also for indie devs or people who are working for development shops. I think the trend towards trying to get a subscription service rather than, let's say, as opposed to upfront paid app or even freemium type stuff can be kind of not that great unless your freemium model is the kind, like some of those games we've talked about that have you repeat buying in-app purchases, right? The consumable ones. And presumably your game is designed in such a way that keeps the person's attention and desire to keep using those. I do think sort of going forward for 2019, but we'll see an even bigger push towards subscription type services for apps. There's a new app out there, Capsicum. That's like a to-do-ish app. I apologize. I've only seen it on Twitter and I haven't really followed it. But yeah. Surprise, surprise.
That's from Ish, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And surprise, surprise, it is a notable new app and it is a subscription-based app because I think that's sort of the way you want to go to not try to go to larger acquisition of ever greater and greater iPhone users. Who knows what's happening with Apple's correction here, but even Apple itself is pushing like, hey, Apple Music, you know, go subscribe to that. Oh, 6 months free on Verizon if you join through there. So I can see more of that happening for both us at the sort of worker bee level, individual level, as well as the larger company level like Apple, Google, Microsoft, and so forth.
Right. Did you see this as a sidebar, did you see Curtis Herbert's post this weekend about the sale numbers from the last few years of, has he switched over to subscription model?
Yeah. Did you see that? I think it was the one saying that, you know, pretty soon he's going to have to start doing Amazon charts so that he won't have to give out precise numbers. But with the precise numbers we have here, it's pretty clear how much more effective that subscription model has been for him. Now, granted, things have changed. I think the last episode I was on, so two episodes ago, we talked about the change in the in-app subscription model that you can do where you can share that sort of stuff and gifting and other things that as things have loosened up, it matches up a little bit nicer with the sort of thing that Curtis is trying to do with the slopes snowboard pass tracking thing because it kind of mirrors the way real world people use that, right? Like I remember borrowing somebody else's pass to go snowboarding and I'm pretty sure I let somebody borrow my pass before too. So this is getting a little bit closer to emulating that real world activity.
Right. Well, I mean, there were a whole lot of things wrong. We've been talking about this for 4 years about the pay once model for an app. I mean, it doesn't support, you know, upgrades. It doesn't support bug fixes. It doesn't support the developer over a long term. Whereas the subscription model, while it's a smaller amount of money being paid over time, it does add up to a reasonable amount of income for a lot of independent developers, right? So, and we've seen a lot of people leave the market because that whole gold rush of sell it once and make a bundle of money, which is what was happening back in 2008, 2009, because there were like five developers out there writing apps, you know, exaggerating, of course. But that's over time. I think the subscription model has sort of been a recurring income, you know, to be able to sustain your business even if you're a small guy, right? So either you got to keep adding in things that make the in-app purchases to make the app have more value, like a game that adds new levels and that kind of things or new challenges. I think you guys know which game I'm talking about, but you gotta find some way to make sustainable income, right? Everywhere, like small guys, big guys.
I think that's the key phrase there is sustainable from much earlier in the smartphone life cycle. And towards the beginning of this very podcast that's going up on 5 years in 2019, we'll hit that marker later this year. It's fewer of the huge home runs of, oh my gosh, this person, you know, didn't know how to code and they spent a weekend, they created, you know, a beer app, a fart app or whatever, and they're a multimillionaire and they've retired at the age of 30, you know, that sort of thing. But we're now, I think we'll see more of the, oh, there is a reasonably sized set of folks who are making, this replaces my job kind of money. I'm not going to go, you know, have yacht and helicopter money and go buy an island off the coast of Costa Rica or something, but I don't have to go into work and I can dedicate myself fully to this activity. I think that's probably what we'll see more of. And I think probably, I mean, these are open because Curtis put them on Twitter, but that was like job replacement money, right? It wasn't go buy an island, build some skyscrapers sort of money. But hey, that's still pretty good though for being able to do this sort of thing from, you know, the comfort of your own couch.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The dream is as independent developers to make enough money that equivalent to having a job and not having to go and write somebody else's code, write something you're passionate about, that kind of stuff, right? So there's a lot of interesting things there. I was listening to the guys who wrote Castro on release notes last week. Same sort of thing. They you know, they built this podcast thing because they wanted to have a podcast app, and then they were at it for 4 years. They're really passionate about it, but they ended up selling it to I think Tiny is the name of the company that bought them. They continue to stay on as and write the app, but now they're employees of the Tiny people, right? So just because that became a much more way of engaging these guys, because they don't have to worry about the sales cycle and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of different ways to build your business up, and that's what we're trying to promote here for people, right? Ideally, mm-hmm. you know, it becomes self-sustaining, right? So, that said, even podcasts cost money, folks. So, you know, throw us a nickel or a dime or a dollar over on patreon.com to keep us going here. That's my pitch. Nothing? You guys got nothing for me?
I was going to say, you know, any amount helps. Literally even a dollar a month helps. I'm not going to snub my nose at a dollar. There also is, as far as I know, no upper limit other than max int, I would guess. So whatever feels like, you know, if Mr. Bill Gates or Mr. Bezos are out there and they enjoy the show.
Sure.
It sure would help.
And we're
us.
Happy to reward our fans, you know, with t-shirts and pins and things if they're so inclined, you know. Actually, the another thing that's happening, just to talk about podcasting for a minute, is a lot of podcasts are going to this new model where you have a username and a password and you log in to get specific episodes, as opposed to like just everyone being free. That's another thing. I think that's going to be coming in the future, where, you know, you have we're seeing paywalls in newspapers now and sort of on news websites. I wouldn't be surprised if in future, you know, you're going to get, you know, like kind of like a Netflix kind of access to content before it's available to the public, right? And I know a lot of people who publish on the web that I know of who've tried that kind of model over time, right? So it's a matter of time where, you know, the market's going to turn. Not everything's going to be free for people, right? So
maybe we should form a podcast consortium with other ones and charge a subscription to get a whole set of podcasts.
Sure.
That way, you know, if someone's just not interested in one particular podcast, we can spread the wealth a little bit.
Pick and choose. Well, there actually are a couple of podcast groups that are like that, where you can support the podcasts. Like you basically support the consortium, as it were, and then they're able to publish podcasts that are, you know, maybe new, not so big and you know, not so small, like, you know. So they've I don't want to name names, but there are some out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And everybody's getting a podcast. I'm sure Kim Kardashian is going to have a podcast in 6 months, and you know, all the big celebs are starting to have them now too. So some are really interesting, but not all of them. Anyway, that's our sidebar.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'll say on that one is it occurs to me that I've listened to some podcasts where they do completely different content. So I think you mentioned the early access to content. Yeah. Like I think LeVar Burton Reads does that. I think if you're subscribed, you get it a week earlier, if I'm not mistaken. But there are other shows, like I'll point out Acquire.fm, one I highly recommend for folks who are interested in the merger and acquisition and IPO sort of world. They have a regular show. It's free. And then they have they chose a cute VC oriented name for it. It's like a venture partner or something that gets completely different content. So almost like side story episodes. And they gave one of those out for free recently. And I loved it because I love the show. I love that. And it makes me think about us, where it's like, oh, you know, more than just code. Maybe we have a subscription feed for nothing but after show, kind of the complete polar opposite of this show.
Or maybe we let people listen to us live while we're recording, you know?
Yeah.
There's lots of different ways to do it.
And then to make it truly meta, nothing but after shows after show will be us talking about nothing but code, just straight up code.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, speaking of things that are happening and cool things happening in your neighborhood, Jaime, what's the story about Apple and its new jobs?
Yeah, this is an article about Dan Morton on Macworld talking about, you know, what Apple's new job edition Questions, Tell Us About His Product Plans. That's the title of it. And it goes over the various locations. Like we've mentioned, San Diego. Looks like they're hiring a lot of folks in the wireless sort of skill. And it says, surprise, surprise, Qualcomm's headquarters are in San Diego. So people are looking to jump ship. That's sort of where you would want to build your base. And Apple is, of course, doing a lot in there. Like we've talked about their W1 chip in the AirPods and Beats headphones and other things that clearly they want to do more and more with that wireless device and networking. As you alluded to, Seattle has a lot going on. Siri, before this article even came out, I knew a big chunk. I'm not sure how big, but it certainly seemed like a significant chunk of Siri was being done here in the Seattle area. I think we've talked about the fact that Turi was a Seattle company that got acquired, and their right. tools mm-hmm. into Turi Create and the CoreML sort of stuff got pulled in together. And apparently content is being done in Culver City. So I guess that makes sense, because didn't we say last episode Culver City's near like SoCal? Area?
LA, yeah, I think.
Culver City's right next to LA.
Yeah, so it's that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So what does content mean? Like news and stuff like that? Or what is it? What's content?
I think it's all the media type stuff they want to do. Remember we talked about like, you know, new Peanuts, Snoopy episodes and Netflix style original series.
Well, that reminds me, I wasn't on the show when you guys were talking about that, because that was the week that I missed, and I was yelling at my phone, of course, when I was listening to it, when I was editing it, but Jennifer Aniston is apparently doing a new series, and it's being paid for by Apple. So there are some big names going into production for different shows that are going to be on some sort of televised device, if you know what I'm trying to say, right? You know, streaming near you. So that's coming in the future. Although even Apple hasn't really said much what they're doing with their sort of their TV content, but apparently there are some big name shows being made
as we
speak.
And I really wish this article, I mean, it talks about the fact that, you know, we mentioned the large facility or campus, I guess, in the Austin area. I really wish I knew more about what that was going to do, but I'll throw in one that I didn't see in this article, which is, let's see if I can find it. It's a completely separate article that said that there's going to be a pretty big bump in the Apple Music-based hires in the Tennessee area, which makes a whole lot of sense to me, because Memphis and Nashville have a metric ton of music.
Well, maybe they can go to Tammy's restaurant when they get hungry.
Right, and I just assume there's going to be live. I haven't talked to Tammy, so I apologize if I'm putting her on the hook. I kind of feel like there will be live music in her restaurant, because there was live music everywhere in Nashville.
Maybe Dolly will show up. Yeah,
wait, exactly. Wait, Tammy has a restaurant now?
She's opening a restaurant with her husband, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think she said it in her driveway, but I don't know if that's really what I heard, but, you know, yeah.
Is it a barbecue restaurant?
I'm not sure. They were battering things in her kitchen the other day, so I'm not sure what they're working on the various recipes and stuff like that. So, yeah, more power to them. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, so I guess that does make sense with Culver being close to LA and content creation, right? Like, because isn't that like Hollywood's game, right, Mark?
Yeah, exactly.
Down there? Yeah. Yeah, and of course, you know, your proximity to the, you know, the people who do the work, you know, it makes sense. All right. Do you have one more here? But speaking of content, you've got one here about, Netflix. Yes, I heard about this one the other day. Why don't you fill us in there, Jaime?
Yeah, it combines both content and subscription services, which we were talking about.
Wow, it's like the content subscription episode.
Right. So apparently Netflix has pulled the iTunes billing out for new users. So rather than using the in-app purchase model to subscribe to Netflix if you're a new user, I haven't seen this because I'm not, I am an existing user, so I don't know what it looks like in the iOS app. But presumably it says, hey, great, you created an account. You don't get anything. And we can't tell you how to go get it, but people will know that you can go to Netflix's website, sign up, you know, for the subscription billing part through the website, and then go back over to the Netflix app for iOS and view the content. So
yeah, this is huge, actually, because I saw something about this article. Not in this one doesn't talk about it, but I saw something like $800 million dollars was involved in what Netflix deals with, like the business Apple deals with Netflix, and Netflix is like their biggest app on the App Store, so, or the app income wise. So this is a big deal.
Yeah, I think Netflix is probably also realizing that, hey, a recession is coming. We need to make sure we get more dollars towards us. And how can we do that? Well, let's remove Apple's 30 or 15%, depending on where they are in that cycle, cut and just get 100% of that dollar for ourselves. Granted, that's at the expense of usability. It's not going to be as seamless for users, but I do think that Netflix is a big enough company company where if you really wanted Netflix, you'll be able to just do a quick Google search and find out how to do it. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, but I mean, there's so many different ways to get Netflix. You don't need to have an iOS device to do it. So that makes that kind of makes sense for them. But here, like it says, I'm reading from an article that I found here. It says, according to data from Sensor Tower cited by TechCrunch, that Netflix grossed $853 million in iOS App Store in 2018. So at today's 15% platform take, that means Apple subscription programs could face a reduction of more than $120 million in revenue. There goes the stock again, eh? If the subscriber numbers go up in 2019.
Isn't that much for Apple.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That's a hangnail to Apple, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But then if it becomes a bellwether for other large apps saying, hey, Netflix did it and nobody bit their head off, you know, the market didn't go crazy or consumers didn't go crazy and have a backlash. So it might convince others to do the same.
Apple bit their own head off because, you know, when Audible came out and you could buy the books through Audible or I think what happened was the iOS app would send you over to the Audible store and you could buy books through the Audible app, right? Some, you know, through a web view or whatever. Apple took offense at that and said, you can't do that in the app. We're going to pull it from the store, whatever. So Audible said, fine. Ever since, like for the last five years or so, you've not been able to buy a book on the Audible app. You had to go to the Audible website and buy the book with your Amazon login, but you can still listen to the content in the app. So it's the same. Apple shot themselves in their own foot in this case. I don't feel sorry for them at all in this case. They've already set up the precedent for that.
Yeah, I don't know that this is like a one size fits all sort of thing, because I imagine there are folks out there wondering like how does this make sense? And I think for smaller apps, we can talk about whether the 30% cut or even the 15% cut is appropriate for, you know, the level of value exchange that you're getting as a developer. I'm not going to argue that specific point, but I think I would argue that when you're at the level of Netflix, it offers almost zero value versus individual developers of like not having to deal with all the hassle of billing and chargebacks and all these other things. Discovery, you know, I know we've talked about Discovery not being all that great, especially as it once was early on in the App Store, but it's certainly non-zero for, smaller individual or independent developers. But for Netflix, nobody like was convinced by the App Store's, you know, editor team, like, oh, I'd never heard of Netflix. Maybe I should try it. No, it's like electricity. Everybody knows it exists. And if you wanted it, you probably just search directly for Netflix rather than show me apps that give me subscription-based service or content, right? So I can see where on the Netflix sort of scale, it doesn't make any sense that they're willing to go deal with the hassles themselves. I think pretty similarly to, I hope we talked about it in the show, the Fortnite game is like so huge that, that they said, you know what, we don't feel like giving Google Play, you know, their cut of the money either. But just go to our own app store and sideload this app and buy it through our store. I think it makes sense at those scales to do this sort of thing. I don't know that it's necessarily applicable as you go further down into the scale of this work.
I heard that Fortnite was free. Is it like that? I heard somebody talking about it on the radio today. I don't know anything about it. I know of it, but apparently it's a free app. And then you're saying there's in-app purchases through the site or something like that? Or
yeah, all sorts of weird customizations like victory dances and adornments and colors.
Those things. Yeah.
So it's kind of more the League of Legends style where they got huge by having tons of people get excited about it and enter into it free and then give you things that do not impact your ability to win. Although I guess color make it harder for you to be seen. So there's a slight advantage there. But I think for the large part, if your horse has a top hat or a hard hat on, that doesn't really impact its survivability in the game, for example.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. All right. Well, I think we're at the picks part of the show here, aren't we?
I believe we are.
Quick. Yeah. So mine is a real quick pick here. It's a video I saw on Twitter. It says the person posted, Manik Rathi says he didn't know this was possible. And it's a way of, it's kind of like shift clicking when you're organizing apps and you want to put them into folders. You have to have a folder. I'm going to describe it because it's a video format, right? But you have a folder that's ready to receive apps and you have a bunch of loose apps that you want to sort of put into that folder. So you press and hold to get the jiggly apps so you can start moving them around. You can edit the screen. But if you hold down on one app and you tap other apps, they fly underneath the app you're holding down with the one finger, and then you can drag the group into a folder. It's kind of a handy way to organize them. It may actually be in the Apple manual for all I know, but I haven't read it. That's an interesting little trick there.
I hadn't heard about that one. Sounds like a good one.
Yeah, I may may have in the back of my brain thought that this was possible when they showed us the multi-selection sort of thing that first started an iPad. But I looked at this tweet and I said, oh, I didn't know you could actually do that in a conscious sort of way.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I have the, while you're doing your thing, I'll look up in my iBooks here to see if I've got the manual, if it says anything about that. Because it looks like a fairly recent, it's similar to the multi-touch, multi-gesture stuff that they were doing on the iPads, right?
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of. But this, again, since the visual, this is on iPhone that they're doing for the Twitter video.
Well, I have the iPhone user guide here, so this is for 11.4. Have you got a pick there, Jaime?
I do. I think, you know, it's the beginning of the year. People probably have New Year's resolutions in mind. Learning new skills is probably one of those. So I'm choosing learntalks.com, which is, who is this by? It's his Twitter account. It says Koa, who is at onmyway133 on Twitter. And he's collected, I don't know what the source is. It probably has this up on GitHub somewhere as the source, but it's a nice little site where you can view various different, as it says on the tin, awesome conference and meetup talks from things like Functional Swift Conf to Ruby Conf. It has a little sidebar that you can open up that will show you individual events like, let's say, 360 iDev or Android Summit. What other things can I see here? NS Spain, Rails Conf, React Amsterdam, and so on and so forth. I think some of these videos I've seen, and it probably is a repeat of some of the things we said, but there are also new things, as I mentioned, like Kotlin Conf, if you're interested in checking that out, or if you're doing a lot of JavaScript, you could check out the JS Conf Asia videos. And there's like a whole ton here. I think you could spend a lot of your lunch hours eating your soup and sandwich and watching these and learning a new skill.
Cool. These are just videos from different, or is it all from the same conference or?
No, it's multiple different languages, or programming languages, multiple different conferences. I don't know if it covers different styles. Let me take a look at 360 iDev real quick.
Well, there was another link that we talked about, I guess, 6 months ago, maybe a year ago, where somebody had collected conference talks from various different conferences, like a dev videos kind of site.
I think it was DevTube, like was something DevTube, similar. Yeah. The weird thing with these is I'm really unclear on what the source is that they're using to acquire these. Like, is it just one individual or one, you know, small group of individuals who says, oh, that's cool, let me add it to the list? Or as I'm seeing more and more common with a lot of these sorts of auto-generated sites where it's backed by some sort of GitHub data, project data, right? Like a repository, probably JSON or CSV format that says, oh, you know, here's the category for Swift, and here's the category for Android, and here's the category for React. And then people can submit via pull request, hey, here's this new conference, or here's this new set of videos sort of thing. And I'm hoping that we can see more community-based stuff to keep these things ongoing and start having a sort of a one-stop shop for a lot of these things, rather than what I think unfortunately happens is you get an initial push, and then without a community, you know, the individual might sort of get tired of doing it or not have the time to do it or whatever the case may be, and it just sort of stays as a frozen in time sort of thing. And I'm hoping this one and DevTube and a couple others, hopefully they can keep that momentum going. But for the very least, the new stuff that's here looks like it ought to be good. Like, Tammy Coron, Wired for Connections, her keynote at 360 IDEA from September 17th, 2018.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah, I didn't get to go this year, so we'll go check that one out.
Oh, 360 IDEA, look at that. Wonderful air in there.
There are 9 pages of, oh, it looks like the category 360 iDev also includes the 360 and dev in Chicago Roboto. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder about some of that.
It's a bad search just looking for 360, I guess.
Yeah, it could be.
Gene McDonald. Oh, there's some 2017 talks here. Keep looking. Danny Clayton. There we are, right there.
Yeah, I just searched for it within the little search sidebar. And I can see ours from 360 iDev 2017. Tim Mitra and Amy Lopez, being a better developer by talking. September 1st, 2017.
Yep. We apologize for the sound in advance. We'll link in the show notes for sure. Well, what do you know? We're famous. Almost. I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
I'm on Twitter as @devofthehair.
All right, Mark, if people want to get in touch with you.
Mark R. at smapsoft.com.
Wow, that was clear. My name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine, and that's the best way to get a hold of me. And so I guess until next week, we'll say bye-bye.
Bye.
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 If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at mtjc_podcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskMTJC. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/mtjc. You can find details on how to help us out on our website at mtjc.fm/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
A dead time of the year. We got lucky that all that Apple news came out all at once.
Yeah. Sort of lucky.
Still looking for this iPhone manual. I didn't see that thing in the iPhone manual when I looked, but let's see if Apple has a new one for 12. Here we go, 12.11. They have an iPod Touch manual, too. Wow.
Did you guys have a good holiday time period?
We tried.
Were you in El Paso?
I was. I went to go see the Sun Bowl game where Stanford defeated Pitt. That'd be Pittsburgh. 14-13. So it was a defensive struggle. It was really good weather, so that was great. Stadium was reasonably full. It wasn't completely sold out.
So did you hear about all this stuff about them dropping off immigrants at bus stations or something?
So one of the encampments where they separate the parents and the children is in is it near Anthony? It's like a small town just outside of El Paso. So it, in terms of metro area, that's definitely the El Paso metro area, which is a rather sad claim to fame, unfortunately, in 2018.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, I didn't see it actually happening, again, because it's not in the city itself. But yeah, given that we're a major border crossing, it didn't surprise me that I was one of the processing areas.
Scary stuff.
Speaking of cable stuff, I just joined YouTube TV today as my sort of final move of cutting the cable cord. So I'll have to remember in a month or so to talk about that as content on the show.
Yeah, I signed up for Apple Music too, by the way. And then I went to look at prices on the HomePod, and they're still $400 or whatever. So
that's really a long time. I got mine for $250.
I know. They dropped them did you get it from Apple that way or from Best Buy or something?
Got it from Best Buy.
Yeah, I heard that. Well, we talked about that on a show a couple of weeks ago that Best Buy had dropped $100 off or whatever, right? But
yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to see if it's a one and done product like Jaime predicts, right?
It feels so weird. I mean, it's not the sort of product that you would need a yearly update, but yeah. I mean, I'd want to see something either in WWDC this year, at least hinted at, or for certain by the September, October timeframe when they release new devices. Mm-hmm. There's got to be something new you can do it, right? AirPlay 3, or now they made a smaller one that's cheaper and you could put 1,000 of them in your house and just have, wall to wall audio.
Yeah, crazy.
It's still a pretty sweet device, though. This thing will last a very long time, I think.
Hmm. Yeah, so maybe we can't write apps for it or something, right? Or whatever. What would you do, though?
Yeah, you can't directly write stuff for it. You do the Siri shortcut stuff.
We can barely handle accessibility as it is, right? Why are my photos going up to Google again? What the hell? Ink is off, so why are my photos going up there?
Is it because some upgrade happened and an option changed? I don't know if you saw me complaining over the holidays. So Twitter had finally given us back the option to change from top tweets as being your timeline to just give me the most recent. Looks like a little smattering of diamond stars in the corner. And
Is that what that does? Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I switched it, and then it switched back just on its own. And it says, after being away for a while, we'll switch you back. I was like, I'd only been away for 6 hours. It's like, why did you switch it back? I wonder why you did.
Facebook does that too, because when you go to Facebook, you see whatever they think that you want. They want you to see, right? And you have to go into a button and say, show me the most recent tweets or most recent posts, and that works for a while. And then the next time you go back in, it's reset to what it was before. So it doesn't have any persistence at all, right? It just the world according to whatever some algorithm thinks we want to see, right?
Oh, the captain of Captain and Tennille died.
Really?
Yeah.
So did Super Dave Osborne. Do you know who he is?
I did. I didn't know he died.
Yeah, he died. that today. Super Dave Osborne.
Yeah, apparently he was going to come out on the new, or he was projected to come out of the Curb Your Enthusiasm, but he was too sick to do it, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. I watched that Jerry Seinfeld comedians driving in cars getting coffee, and he was in there a couple of episodes.
Yep. Yeah, that was a good show. So have you guys seen Bandersnatch yet?
Oh, yeah. That Bandersnatch is really good. Have you seen it, Jaime?
I have not. I was going to watch it with my fiance when she gets back in the town. She's coming back from her holiday stuff. A little bit different than I am.
It's really interesting. That's all I got to say.
It's an interactive one, right? That's what the news I saw. Like a choose your own adventure sort of book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Did you get all the way to the end, Mark?
Several times through different paths.
Oh, really? Same ending or what?
No, a couple of different endings.
Really? Yeah. I think that there's a couple of trap endings where you think you've ended in, or it's the wrong ending, or, you know, it's a disastrously ending.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But that's how those books used to work, right?
Yeah.
You'd get halfway through the book and then you're done. You're dead, you know?
Yeah.
You have to go back to the beginning and start again, right? Sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no spoilers.
Not yet.
Anybody get out to the theaters and watch any movies?
No, I've been watching, I binged a bunch of shows on the Netflix, even though I said I don't binge, right?
What did you binge?
There's a show about going to Mars with Sean Penn, which, you know, was okay. I binged all the Jerry Seinfeld ones I just talked about. Mm-hmm. I watched a couple of comedy specials. I watched the Black Mirror episode. I did finish Game of Thrones.
Mm.
Went all the way through though.
I watched Mindhunter. Have you seen that one?
No, what's that one about?
It's about FBI agents chasing, or not so much chasing, but trying to figure out what serial killers were all about back in the 70s.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Oh, I've seen one or two episodes, and the killer that they talk to, that they're interviewing in the prison, is like hella creepy.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I need to finish that.
So there's a few of them like that. Pretty much every episode has one of those.
So is that on Netflix or?
Yep.
It's on Prime Netflix. Or, okay.
Did you guys see Bird Box? This is another movie that I'll watch.
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Haven't watched that one yet.
Oh, yeah. You know what I watched? I watched Avengers Infinity War came on Netflix this weekend, and so I watched that again, you know, and I was able to go back and rewind stuff, and it's a really good movie for a Marvel movie, like, you know, I mean, I know they're all good, but it's probably one of my favorite movies by them, but I don't know if you have to, like, know all the characters and what have you, but it made a lot more sense watching it, you know, in my own pace, as opposed to sitting in a movie with a movie theater with 3D goggles on, right? So
yeah, you're probably able to catch more of the Easter eggs and some of the
more of the nuance of the characters and who they are and, you know, what happens, and, you know, where they show up early in the thing and they have a role later on or whatever. Yeah. I didn't see the Easter egg with the guy from Arrested Development and what's the guy that the collector's collection, you know? You know about that one?
Yeah. The balding guy with the glasses and mustache.
Yeah, the blue guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They never knew.
Oh, yeah. What's his name? Funny comedian.
David.
He's on the show. David Cross.
Yeah. David Cross, yeah. All right.
All right.
I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.